Jacksonville has its eye on big sporting events after they leave North Carolina. But could our lack of protections for LGBT residents be a problem? JEA says it's going to lower your electric bill. And after nearly half a century, Jacksonville's University Club is closing its doors. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Plus, the Sulzbacher Center and their mission of transformation for this area's homeless. We'll tell you about it. Then later, reggae star Ras Midas. All of that ahead. But first this hour, it's Friday, and the roundtable is here with David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
A.G. Gankarski of Folio Weekly and Florida Politics.
Good morning.
Fred Matthews, formerly of The Examiner.
Good morning, Melissa.
And editor Tim Gibbons with the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to see you.
A group of all-stars this Friday. Gentlemen, good to have you. Lots to talk about, from lower electric bills at your house and business, that's so says JEA, to positive news about Jacksonville from the Census Bureau coming out this week, and more. But our top story this Friday, Jacksonville sports and the HRO. Here's the question. Will Jacksonville's lack of a law extending anti-discrimination protections to LGBT people be a factor when the NCAA considers whether this city should host future championship sporting events? Now, you might have heard that north of us, North Carolina, is losing these big games due to legislation in that state that discriminates against LGBT people. And while Jacksonville would love to get some of that action, critics say the refusal to expand legal protections here might mean the NCAA would pass us by. What do you think about this? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, weigh in on Facebook. Let's begin with David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. You have published a story about this. People can check it out at jacksonville.com. What are the two sides on this issue?
Well, I think the basic issue is that North Carolina passed a law that basically the NCAA says disqualifies them from holding these events. Jacksonville, on the other hand, has not passed a law that extends legal protection to LGBT people. So that will be a factor in how the NCAA considers Jacksonville's bids. We just don't know at this point how big a factor. It's not a disqualifying factor, but it will be a factor of some kind in the mix.
And Tim Gibbons, the NCAA gives a questionnaire to prospective host cities, 14 questions, and one of them is whether the city has passed anti-discrimination laws applicable to all people and what legal recourse people have under local law if they are victims of discrimination. Jacksonville cannot answer that question in the way that the NCAA would like.
The people have said for years, as the entire HRO debate has gone on, that there will be an impact, that not having it has stopped employees from moving here, has stopped companies from moving here, that it makes the city not be the welcoming place that it says it wants to be. As David says, we can't know how much that plays in, but it's another point in that idea that, you know, it's an issue that matters to people.
Fred Matthews, Mayor Curry, telling the TU and others this week that he's confident this issue will not impact the city's ability to attract these kinds of events. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, he's got good ground to say that, because we have not passed anything that would be, that you could construe to be anti-gay, lesbian, and bisexual. You can't say that. Now, the fact that it has not passed the city council, they didn't, is another issue. But you can't say that we're discriminating against them here in Jacksonville, because again, the issue in North Carolina was that it was an entire state law that was very clear as to what their intent would be, and what it, and the effect it would have throughout the state. That's not the case in the state of Florida. That's not the case anywhere in the state of Florida. And to his credit, I mean, it is. It says that currently we cannot discriminate upon race, religion, sex, national origin, disability, marital status. That's what we don't. The city of Jacksonville does not discriminate.
It doesn't include that final category, though.
Well, I mean, that could be also given as an extraordinary category, given the fact that when we say you don't discriminate, you don't discriminate. We also don't have that in the Constitution of the United States either. It's not extraordinary there. We just added the 14th Amendment. I mean, so that's all it is. We don't have anything there either. So, I mean, but all the other
That's why issues, so many cities have enacted these types of ordinances, because there is no federal clause that you're referring to.
Right. So when that moves to be extraordinary, then I think it could be something that could be considered, is that. But Jacksonville has not voted against it, neither has the state of Florida.
All right. A.G. Gankarski, the chair of the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality, is speaking out on this. We certainly can expect organizations like Equality Florida and the national organization, the Human Rights Campaign, to probably weigh in as well.
Yeah, I mean, Jacksonville's not passed an anti-LGBT law, but Jacksonville's behind a curve in the rest of the state. Orlando, Miami, Tampa, Daytona Beach, they all have
they're pretty progressive in Daytona Beach.
Yeah, exactly. They have these protections because they're good for business, because they make sense, because they stop some of the more egregious discrimination that people in the LGBT community experience, you know, in the workplace. They experience it in housing. They experience it, you know, in a variety of ways, public accommodations. And that's why these laws need to be passed. If Jacksonville does not discriminate, then it follows that if a law like this were to pass, there would be no violations of it.
So comes the question, who is going to introduce it on our Ballyhoo City Council?
We know who's going to introduce it. It's going to be Tommy Azzurri.
You think so?
You know, we don't know if council's going to actually back him up this time.
Okay, let's talk about that. David Bauerlein, Councilman Tommy Azzurri, former mayor, former school board member, former state lawmaker, etc. He has said several times that now that the city is through the debate over the pension referendum, he's going to try again with the human rights ordinance. Can Azzurri build a coalition this time around for passage?
Well, I think he can, just based on the fact that you have council members who previously have voted for an anti-discrimination law. The big question is whether it will cover gender identity, gender expression, which Azzurri says is vital, and that has been a big sticking point in terms of getting that coalition put together.
Right.
That's basically projecting transgender people.
That would be the T in LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. Advocates for a fully inclusive measure, Tim, say you can't leave anyone behind. Others have argued that perhaps it's better to get half a loaf than none. Those are the arguments on that.
Although I think the half a loaf argument kind of had its day. The issue of it hasn't been passed over the past couple years. I think the less expansive expansion, if that had passed earlier, there would probably be less appetite for a fight to add the T. But at this point, you go for years, people having a fight, not getting what they want. Now they're looking to win.
Let's go to your calls on our top story. As Jacksonville looks at big sporting events, can our lack of an HRO affect our ability to land these big games? What do you think? 549-2937. Mike is on the south side. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment with regards to Fred Matthews' statement and kind of defending what Curry said with regards to the issue at hand. I think really the problem is actually one of clarity. We don't have a clear statement that that LGBT are protected, and it's that lack of clarity that's exactly the problem that's going to put us in a situation where, you know, we're not coming down firmly on one side or the other. Yes, North Carolina is being very clear that they're on one side, but it's our lack of clarity that's going to put us in contention with some of these things. So I'm interested in rebuttal on that. So I'll listen off the air, but that I just felt I needed to chime in with that regard. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Fred?
Well, I mean, the safe vote on this is going to have to hold off until what? After swearing in January of the new council, right? Because we've still got Clay Yarborough is still there. Don Redmond is still not completely off, right? No. So we've got to wait a bit. Is he still there?
They've moved off, Fred.
Right, yeah. They moved off. So you've got to wait until
forgotten.
You've got to wait until we get all of them seated and get some talking to them on this level, which is still at least a couple of months, maybe even after the holidays, before we're going to get a vote on this thing.
AG.
You know, if we're talking about the state level. You know, the state level, you're not going to see legislation come through in the same way because Richard Corcoran's going to be Speaker of the House for 2 years. You know, he won't be able to get something like HB 2 passed on a state level, but because there's, you know, moderate Republicans downstate.
But what that caller was talking about was clarity here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, well, clarity here in Jacksonville, that's going to be a tough one to get because, you know, it's going to be introduced this fall. Tommy Azuri's going to introduce it, but he's going to have the same problem he had last time. You know, you got 18 people on this council who are scared to death of two things, cops and preachers. If three preachers call them up and say, hello, councilman, I'm going to end your political career if you vote for this thing, they will back down. They go quiet because they always do. I mean, this is a council that can pass one bill in a particular meeting but have three presentations honoring the preachers.
And, that's why we're going to end up waiting till after the holidays.
Well, I mean,
let me get a few more callers on the line. Let's go to Mitch in Ortega. Hi, Mitch. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment that I really think it's the ultimate in naivete to even think that Jacksonville would have any consideration by the ACC with them being unable to answer question 14 in the correct way. And, you know, the bottom line, the reality is that we have a majority of cowards on our city council. And, you know, I commend Councilman Hadori, Councilman Anderson, and a few others who are showing some courage to this and who are standing up for equal rights. But the bottom line is the city's going to lose out. Thank you for taking my
call. Okay, thanks, Mitch. Bonnie in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Oh, good morning. I had a totally different attitude when I first called. I was really upset that we're more afraid of losing football money than we are of of what our citizens want. And if preachers in this town have so much influence over the city council, don't you think that means that most of the people in the town don't want this amendment passed? So why are we afraid of losing football, but we're certainly not afraid of offending the rest of the citizens because they have preachers speaking for them? I think you've got your priorities wrong. I have a gay daughter. She's married. She has a home. She has a family with another woman. There has not been any incidents of her being discriminated against, like you're saying, oh, it's so blatant. It's not. And even she and her friends say that this organization, the gay organization, is going too far in trying to shove their ideas down everybody else's throat. So I really think y'all are looking at money more than you are the citizens.
Okay. Thanks, Bonnie. All right. What about her point of view?
I mean, obviously, the any political group is not a monolith. I'm sure there are, you know, gay people who are opposed to expanding the HRO. That makes perfect sense. I think the idea, though, that the majority of the citizenry is opposed to this.
The polling does not reflect that, actually.
Exactly. And I think that's not an accurate statement.
Yeah, there is a bipartisan majority, according to a poll that has been done on this for expansion. But I appreciate everybody's calls on this morning. Let's take a few more of your calls, and then we will move along to other topics. Jimmy in Brooklyn. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Hey, good morning, Melissa, everyone. How are y'all?
Great. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, I'm just calling to, you know, come in a little bit. I mean, earlier we were talking about, and of course, half a loaf, I think, means leaving transgender people out. And I can tell you the Coalition for Equality has no interest in that. Half a loaf is a poison loaf. It poisoned the 2012 bill, and we couldn't pass it based on that and some other things. With regard to the current council, I mean, we've had this current council seated for over a year, Mr. Matthews, and Mr. Yarbrough, Mr. Redmond, and all those folks are gone now from the council. So I do believe that if we can generate a little bit of power, we can remind this current council that we have not three pastors who can control everything, but we have 150 faith leaders who have signed on to our coalition, and we can go toe-to-toe on that. But really, it's not about religion. It's about doing what's right for the citizens of Jacksonville and for this economic development opportunity that we have out here. And the NCAA and the ACC can look at our competitive cities, and our competitive cities aren't North Carolina. The cities that compete with us are Orlando, Tampa, Atlanta. So what do they have that we don't? Well, one thing, the HRO. We need that.
Okay, yeah. That's Jimmy on the line with the local Coalition for Equality. And, you know, the previous caller, Bonnie, said, you know, why is money and sports more important? There's another. We have a tweet about that from Emily. The benefit of this argument over sports is that it will end up helping in the passage of an inclusive HRO, meaning that people care enough about sports and not losing these types of events that it could force the change through. What do you think about that argument?
Well, you know, it's yet another canary in the coal mine. You know, the fact that Jacksonville is out of step with other cities it's competing with, even as Jacksonville positions itself as a regional leader, if not a global leader, even if we, you know, it speaks volumes to organizations like the NCAA and others to come. I mean, the fact is that whenever we have debates in this issue, the dominant voices are not the majority. The dominant voices are a loud minority of preachers who are politically connected, who cultivate political connections. You know, whether Alvin Brown's mayor, whether Lenny Curry's mayor, the same people in the mayor's office with their hands out, you know, looking for their leg up. The same people are in council chambers. The same people are being honored. You're going to have Gary Wiggins there no matter what. You're going to have Fred Neubel there no matter what. And this is the thing. It's like, is Jacksonville willing to stand up and say to this preacher class, You know, hold it down. We need to do what's right for business. We need to get in line with other cities. We are not McClenny. We are not Lake City. We're not Live Oak. We're a real deal city trying to compete on the global stage, and the HRO is the price of admission.
Clearly, that's where clearly. I think that lukewarm argument, the problem with it is that price of admission thing, that saying, well, we haven't come out and passed a discriminatory law, therefore we're good. That's not going to cut it.
You know, the culture is not there anymore.
As we're talking about preachers, you know, the old, you know, neither hot nor cold, you get spewed out sort of thing. It doesn't work to not take a stance.
Adam on the West Side. Go ahead, Adam. Happy Friday, Adam.
Hello. I just wanted to make a quick statement in regards to all the pastors in this town that want to be so influential in the politics of this town, but a lot of them don't realize that that's really overstepping their boundaries. You know, we have a clear separation of church and state, and all of these pastors that want to give their two cents in regards to the politics of the nation, the politics of the community, unfortunately, there are other ways for them to step up and provide that help other than trying to just give their personal opinions about matters. I mean, that kind of violates their tax exemption status, am I right?
David Bauerlein.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they're able to be active politically, go to the podium, make their statements, have press conferences. That's certainly within their purview as citizens of the city. So I don't have a problem with that. Yeah, the city has spent a lot of money in sports tourism, invested a lot. It's a big part of the city's economic development strategy. One of the big arguments against expanding the HR has always been that nothing's at stake. It doesn't have any impact economically. Well, there start of signs that it does, and that's just becoming more and more clear as the national political scene, national cultural changes.
Well, speaking of economic impact, also making headlines this week, JEA says it expects proposed changes to save utility customers $100 million with a plan they'll lay out for us next week. It would reduce your electric bill beginning this year, keep bills stable, and avoid rate increases in the next 5 years. It's 549-2937 to discuss this. Fred Matthews, who's not going to like this news if JEA can pull it off?
Well, those folks who have been trying to push the solar panel business.
That's a good point.
Not going to be, this is all, but you could almost view this as a bit of an end around them. They were pretty much able to shut them down, I think, in the legislature. They haven't been able to get that passed. I think there is a referendum up that probably folks can't understand that actually inures to the benefit of those who are against the option of solar panels. But I mean, you know, from a consumer standpoint, this is a great big PR move, and it is real dollars. I mean, many of us did get a rebate in our JEA bills earlier this year. I got mine about a month after I mentioned it here on the air, but
no connection at all.
But I mean, it's a good PR move. It is there is something, but it does kind of fly in the face of the and of course, coal prices are going down. That's the other part. We're coal based. The prices have gone down. They're going to continue to go down again unless we get a change in federal government. A lot hangs on this election this fall.
Yeah, and Tim, nearly 400,000 residential customers of JEA, they will see a lower bill, but the big savings JEA says will go to businesses. Commercial customers, they think that will have a halo effect on the local economy.
It absolutely will. You know, that's huge news from an economic development standpoint, particularly as you look at high-tech, energy-intensive sort of businesses. There's an issue with, you know, the data centers, which Jacksonville has kind of become a hub for, but they do struggle with one of the higher electricity rates, you know, in the country, and that can become an issue when you are trying to attract a business that will use a lot of energy. If you can drop that cost, it goes to their bottom line. It makes the place more attractive.
And a few other news and notes from the week. We'll start with the bad news and then move on to a more positive headline. The number to join us is 549-2937. Well, after nearly 50 years, the University Club at the top of that tower on the South Bank, it's closing its doors. Excuse me, the Bank of America building on the North Bank. It's been the place for business leaders to meet and entertain clients with a beautiful view of downtown for years. This is sort of the end of an era for a lot of people to see this club shut its doors.
Yeah, I mean, this really is kind of the code of the sort of the good old boy networking era of Jacksonville. The kind of people we see in their 60s and 70s today who, you know, ran the city 20, 30, 40 years ago. You know, this was their spot. And now an out-of-state corporation, Club Corps, is deciding that it's no longer a viable operation. You know, University Club's been identified with a lot of positive things, but also a lot of negative things, you know, excluding minorities, excluding women. And, you know, that there's a mixed legacy to it that, you know, might not be mentioned too much in the print reports on it, but, you know, it really is the end of an era in Jacksonville for good and for ill.
Yeah. Fred, I saw on social media yesterday people reminiscing about their grandmother or mother not being allowed in and African-Americans not being allowed to join. So it certainly, while loved by many, is also a reflection of times in the past that were not so well remembered.
It was one of the best high-end waiters job you could get. if you were there and you were, it was like, you know, being able to walk through the room and get secrets from all of the city's top people. I mean, there were several places, the River Club, the University Club, and the old Diamond Head restaurant down there is where all of the business of Jacksonville could be taken care of. Now, a friend of mine just decided he'd have lunch at the University Club the other week and, you know, thought about it with nothing. But, it is a symbol of bygone days here in Jacksonville, but that's what you want. You want business to be in charge. Well, they made a business decision.
And, David, you've seen a lot of these places open and shut their doors over the years, too.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of a series like Mad Men where you sort of show how things change over time. You know, if those walls could talk, I mean, you could just sort of do an entire history of the city in terms of how cultural mores changed just over that 48-year period and everything about how the city has developed and evolved.
We broke a story yesterday on an iconic deli in Riverside that is getting a new
White
owner.
Way.
Right Way, exactly. And you know, another one of those places that have had city leaders come through, two doors down, shut down, you know, earlier this year. There is just kind of a passing of an era sort of thing.
Yeah. And as we talk about that chapter closing, we want to take a look ahead now and talk about the Census Bureau's new data that came out this week, giving us a snapshot of where Jacksonville is right now and where it's going. The income levels are up, unemployment is down, and according to this new American Community Survey 2015, if demographic trends continue, Jacksonville will be what's known as majority-minority by the year 2022, not far off at all, as this metropolitan area becomes ever more diverse. A.G. Gankarski, there's a lot to go through in this data, and there's a lot to talk about, both good and bad, in terms of income inequality and so forth, but a lot of good news, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back to consolidation 50 years ago, you know, one of the unexpressed reasons for consolidation was, you know, they wanted to keep the city majority white. That time is over. And, you know, that's a positive thing for Jacksonville because you're going to have more diversity in, you know, public offering, more diversity in business and so on. You got to look also that at another trend, though, which is that you're still seeing a lot of white flight to St. Johns County. You're seeing people who work here move there. You're seeing people move from out of state to places like St. Johns County, Clay, even Nassau now. And, you know, so that's really kind of the thing. I mean, Jacksonville is becoming, like many other cities, you know, one that, you know, is going to be majority-minority very soon. But at the same time, you know, you're going to have these outer ring county, you know, bedroom suburb counties that, you know, are going to be, you know, largely lily white.
The growth in residential in St. John's County is just massive. If you look at, you know, the amount of building permits getting pulled for houses there, you look at what Nocatee is doing, and it's just a huge number of people who are choosing to live in St. John's County, oftentimes for, you know, the school district, but it does end up being a suburban bedroom community there. Working here, which has an impact on our tax base.
Yeah, and let me ask you, David and Fred, about this too. Because affordable housing is still a big issue in the city, we're still seeing a higher than average percentage of families choosing to rent rather than buy, and even finding an affordable rental can be tough for a lot of people too.
Yeah, I think that's the case, and you know, maybe that's part of the natural evolution of the city. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where there's not big areas like Nocatee and Jacksonville where you can go and build thousands of homes. People are going to be doing residential living, which is why it's stunning to me that downtown is not getting more residential apartments. It just seems like that would have been the case long ago. But yeah, clearly people are going to rent, and it may be harder to get loans, all those kinds of things as we kind of pull out of the housing crash from a few years ago.
And a little bit more as we go into the survey, Jacksonville is getting closer to becoming a minority-majority city due to explosive Hispanic and Asian population growth. African-American population in Jacksonville is about one-third of the city. In just 6 years, we've seen big changes, Fred, when you look at the demographics of Northeast Florida.
Well, a lot of that helps because we are a big service community. We're not a big manufacturing community. We, insurance used to be a big deal here. It's not the kind of big deal. Insurance and banking used to be big deals for Jacksonville. It's not that. We're now a service economy. We have become much more tech savvy in terms of the jobs we have. But again, the salaries have not kept up with it. That's one of the big bugaboos mm-hmm. for Jacksonville that continues to haunt us, is that the salary levels haven't been there. We may see some increase with what's going to happen with the new Amazon plant on the north side, but it's just not there in terms of the salaries. And those who are making the salaries are in St. Johns County, recognized now as one of the most prosperous counties in the state.
Yeah,
here in St. Johns County, I can believe it. And for anybody who gets on I-10, 295, or heading to the beach at 5 o'clock, you know everybody's going home.
Consolidation should have gone further. If we had just consolidated Jacksonville and St. Johns County, everything would be okay now.
You know, but this is
Tim is making a little joke there for those who can't see his facial expression. But go ahead, AG.
Yeah, this is kind of an important point, though. A lot of this demographic change is on the south side, which 30, 40 years ago was majority white. You're seeing a lot of Asian influx in the Bay Meadows area. You see a lot of Hispanic influx, University, Beach Boulevard, areas like this. So that's where a lot of the demographic change is happening. It's not happening so much on the north side. It's not happening so much downtown or, you know, in the more new areas, but sort of like old school south side, mm-hmm. close to the core city, but not quite there.
Okay. Lots of news that we've discussed this hour, but finally, it's also our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And only in Florida are people shot by an oven. Yes, 18-year-old Alea Walker was visiting a friend in St. Petersburg Monday when they decided they wanted some late-night waffles. She began preheating the oven, unaware that her friend had stored a magazine from his 45 caliber Glock 21 in said oven.
Gotta check the oven first.
The magazine exploded, spraying casing at high speed and striking and injuring Walker. She was treated and released, but gun and ammunition references indicate that the 45 caliber bullets commonly used in Glocks can explode at temperatures as low as 280 degrees. In fact, in a memorable 2007 episode, the popular science TV show MythBusters proved in several experiments that bullets can explode if an oven is hot enough.
Magazines go in the refrigerator, knives go in the oven.
So Aaliyah found that the oven was hot like fire.
And only in Florida do manatees wash up on a golf course. Yeah. A group of manatees displaced by Hurricane Hermine are headed home, but they were stuck for a couple of weeks in a pond at a golf course in Citrus County on the Gulf Coast. They were swept in there by the floodwaters that receded too fast. Four adults, two calves. Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission workers and volunteers moved the manatees back, but it wasn't easy. Mm-mm. They said one was one of the biggest they've ever seen, weighing in at more than 1,400 pounds.
Have you ever tried to move a manatee?
No.
There's no bone there. There's nothing. You can't roll it. You can't.
I know. I'm trying to picture how they did this. I have no idea.
They've got a golf club and just
put them on the back of the golf cart.
They are the best. Fred Matthews, A.G. Gankarski, Tim Gibbons, and David Bauerlein. Thank you, gentlemen.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
You can support this program and many others by giving us a call right now here at WJCT. Here's how.
Give us a call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Good morning. I'm Kevin Mersch, our producer for First Coast Connect. If you enjoyed this program, the great discussion we have every Friday on the Media Roundtable and all the great news we bring you every single day, then give us a call and show your financial support for this, our fall fund drive. Today's Friday. This is the last day of our drive, so we need your help right now. We're a bit behind where we need to be. We want to raise $72,000, and we're not even at 30 yet, so we have a ways to go. Make that call now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Been a good week here at First Coast Connect. We had many great interviews. Donald C. Jones, who was a survivor of the Miracle on the Hudson. Yesterday, we had a great conversation with the new head of the Wounded Warrior Project. All that kind of stuff we bring you every single week. Next week, we're going to have a conversation Monday regarding international trade. We have the head of Jack Sports going to be here. We also, next week, I believe, we're going to have Bob Graham, former governor, former senator of Florida. Bob Graham will be in our studios to talk about his latest book. That's the kind of things we're able to bring you because listeners like you show your financial support. Programming is so important. The people like that come in here because they know that this is a place unlike other places where they can have a long conversation and really get into the nitty-gritty and have a good discussion about some of the major issues of the day and take your phone calls because they like to know what you're thinking as well. It only makes that happen because you call in your support for this program. So give us a call right now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, and thank you for your support.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
North Florida TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services, clean fuels, and intelligent transportation systems. More at northfloridatpo.com.
On the next Diane Reem Show, the Friday News Roundup, a new poll shows Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump virtually tied in the presidential race. Russian hackers leak emails from former Secretary of State Colin Powell, and the Justice Department opens an investigation into Wells Fargo over a fake accounts scandal.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Hey, what's that?
That's the sound of music, David.
The movie? No, it's WJCT's After Hours programming. You know, Indie Endeavor, Blues Horizon, Electro Lounge, Ring a Bell.
Oh yeah, I knew it sounded familiar. That reminds me to thank you listeners for always remembering us. We're throwing a concert hosted by yours truly.
And me, and Andrew Wickman of Blues Horizon, September 23rd, 7 p.m. at Unity Plaza. And yeah, yeah, David, I know, you have a problem remembering.
Welcome back. Well, at the Sulzbacher Center in downtown Jacksonville, people have a mission to transform the lives of this area's homeless. You can support that mission this month. CEO Cindy Funkhauser is here to tell us how. And of course, this is one of the most beloved galas of the year, Transformations. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And the theme this year is It Takes a Village. What's going to be happening?
So this is our 18th annual Transformations, and as you know, we do always tell the stories, normally three stories, of the resiliency of the people that come through the center. But this year, it takes a village. The theme of that, it's an African proverb, I'm sure you know, it takes a village to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually does take a village to raise families out of homelessness and individuals, and actually to solve any kind of complex problem. So this year we're focusing not just on the stories of the people,
mm-hmm.
but also on the partners in the community that we work with every day, and particularly the ones that we worked with on those individual stories. So we're going to be highlighting the partnerships and the collaborations, which I think is right now, in this time of divisiveness,
yeah,
I think it's so important that people understand at the grassroots level here in Jacksonville, we have such a spirit of collaboration across sectors and that people do work really well together here. I think it's important to celebrate that.
Absolutely. Lots of people working together on these complex issues and taking a family from homelessness to self-sufficiency
mm-hmm.
is just, it's very difficult, but what rewarding work. And when people come out to Transformations, this is Thursday, September 29th at the Times Union Center.
Yes.
They will learn about these efforts and they can be part of the success of the Sulzbacher Center.
Absolutely. And so I like to say this is probably the best value fundraiser in town. It's $50. And that, as you know, is very, very, that's one of the lowest fundraisers.
What a deal.
It's such a deal, people. It is such a deal.
Yeah, and you get a lot. Now, Nikki Kimbleton from Channel 4 will be your MC. Very
yes.
glamorous. I
yes.
love to see that. You'll learn about three local success stories.
Mm-hmm.
You'll learn about, as you said, the mission of Sulzbacher, which is right downtown. And for anybody that's had the chance to visit, there are a whole range of programs and services you are working on.
Oh, absolutely. We work around three major areas: income, housing, and healthcare. So, you know, when people think of us, they're thinking of a shelter. And we do have the largest shelter, a 360-bed shelter. Of the 360, by the way, 200 are now women and children, which is a whole nother story we can talk about on a different day. But we're doing that. We're also one of two federally qualified healthcare centers in town. So we're doing primary care, dental, optical, yeah. HIV care, behavioral health, and all of that. In addition to the most important thing is the housing piece. And that's going to be a part of the story we're telling this year, and it takes a village. Last year, we kicked off our capital campaign, you'll recall, for our Sulzbacher Village. And I heard in the previous segment you were talking about affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is such a dearth of that in Jacksonville, and that does contribute greatly to the homeless issue. And so we have been working for several years on the Sulzbacher Village. It's 70 units of permanent housing, affordable housing. And so come to Transformations. You're going to get an update, and you're going to hear where we are on that very, very exciting project. And you're going to hear about the Village People, which is all of the different groups helping us to make this project a reality.
It's Thursday, September 29th at the Times Union Center, the 18th annual Transformations. Sulzbacher CEO Cindy Funkhauser, thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
More to come. Stay with us.
great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT presents Lynn Sherman, our 2016 American Graduate Champion of the First Coast, dedicated to mentoring our youth.
Tipping the Scales' mission is to help teenagers from ninth grade as they journey through graduation and provide all of the supports they need in order to make that happen.
To hear more stories of champions, watch American Graduate Day on WJCT, Saturday, September 17th at 2 p.m.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, TPA Fest is coming up this weekend, a first-of-its-kind event at Jacksonville's The Performers Academy. Development Director Jamario Stills is here to tell us more, and this is a wonderful place where kids really get to focus on their creative talents. Good morning. Good to see you.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
What's going to be happening? And this starts today, right?
This starts today. It's this entire weekend, and TPA Fest, we'll just add a little bit more context. The Performers Academy is a creative hub for performing arts. It's more or less like a co-works for the arts, and so this festival is a celebration of all the performing arts, theater, dance, music, spoken word, and it's an interactive event whereby attendees will be welcomed onto 10,000 square feet of land, and each room is a pocket of art and entertainment for people who are taking part in the event.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We're really trying to approach the arts in a non-traditional, contemporary fashion, rubbing elbows with all these facets of the arts and exploring nuances therein.
And there's been just a hub of creativity at the Performers Academy. This is a way to kind of celebrate this community in Jacksonville.
Absolutely. All of the events are being led by local artists, and each one of these artists are leaders in their fields. And we're just excited to take part in this and continue to promote and add to the discussion of the performing arts in the city. Jacksonville is on the on the rise of doing some incredible things.
This is the TPA Fest 2016, today through Sunday at the Performers Academy. Start your weekend off with a bang. Enjoy a cold glass of beer, comedy games, live music, all kinds of art celebration, and all profits benefit the local artistic community. Thanks for being with us, Jamario Stills.
Thank you so much.
Speaking of artists, finally this hour, singer, songwriter, performing and recording artist, composer and producer Ross Midas has produced critically acclaimed roots rock reggae music since 1974. Take a listen.
I remember the days when my mama used to have the shovel and my daddy used to have the pickaxe. Then I know that Rasta Man is an exiler. Oh, yeah.
His new CD, Rastaman in Exile, is out now. We've got more as we welcome the legendary artist to the studio, Ross Midas. A pleasure to see you again on the show. Good morning.
Good morning and welcome to the Jacksonville community and welcome to WJC PBS.
Yeah, yeah, you're right here with us.
Yes.
Now, I did not know this, but this album, Rastaman in Exile, you originally released this on vinyl in 1980. It was the Reggae Album of the Year in France. Is that right?
Yes, and one of the top-selling reggae albums of all times.
That
also
is just incredible.
Yes.
So why is the time right now, do you think, to do a reissue of this wonderful music?
At the time when this album released, the world was in this said turmoil, the problem in the Middle East and terrorism, and the world has made a circle to that said situation right now.
Sure. You remixed this right here in Jacksonville Beach at Cypress Records Studio. We need to give them a shout out. Can you tell us a little bit about what Rastaman in Exile speaks to? What is the exile that you feel?
People that living in the world that is in problem, that really cannot be stable in their homeland because of war or political atrocity, such as the refugees crisis that is taking place from the Middle East into Europe, and other people that is migrating to different parts of the world to have a better way of life.
And in this piece, you talk about people all over the world that have been exploited, that live under colonialism, that people that are suffering under oppressions of all kinds. Is that right?
Yes, because the legacy of colonialism hasn't passed away as yet. It still exists, and people in the United States don't have the understanding what is taking place. So I think this music will try to educate people what it's all about.
Now, you're a beloved reggae and roots rock artist all over the world, but you're located right here in Jacksonville. Why do you call this area home?
Because it's a beautiful place and the people are very nice and friendly, and the climate remind me of Jamaica, where I'm from.
Yeah, it reminds you a little bit of home?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you think it is about this genre that has such worldwide appeal? Reggae music has a staying power and an emotional impact with people that I think transcends all cultures.
Yeah, well, reggae music is for the common people, the working people, people that is looking to rejuvenate themselves economically, and the music speak out for people that don't have a voice. Mm-hmm. And so that's why reggae music is so powerful and popular around the world, because reggae music is the news, is the voice of the common people, the working people.
You have a website that we want everyone to check out. It's rossmadas.com. The release date for Rastaman in Exile is September 22nd, but it's actually available online beginning today. Is that right?
It is available on my website if people would like to order, but it will be released on CD Baby and Amazon on the 22nd of this month.
He is a reggae legend, Rastamadas, and his re-released classic, Rastaman in Exile, was remixed right here in Jacksonville Beach. Go to his website, rastamadas.com, to get your copy and learn more about his artistry. Pleasure to see you, and thanks again for being with us.
Yes, pleasure to be with you, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Yeah, give thanks.
Do we have time to play a little bit more of his music? Let's do that, and then we'll close the show and explain why we need you to support WJCT and 89.9. But this is Rastaman in Exile. Thanks for listening. Kevin Merschart is our producer. Michelle Quorum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. Diane Reams up in a few minutes. Right now, though, a little music and a little on-air supporting of 89.9. Have a great weekend.
Fun stuff we bring you here on First Coast Connect every day, and we're able to do that because listeners like you show your financial support. Good morning. I'm Kevin Merschart, producer for First Coast Connect. We're here to ask for your support for all the programs you enjoy here at WJCT. Give us a call right now at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Think of all the great things we bring you. We give you all the great programming. We have great events that come up. We have Girls' Day Out coming up on Saturday at the Hyatt which is a great health program for women around the First Coast and the area. We don't forget, we have our concert, a WJCT concert on Thursday. That's also going to be real exciting stuff. And we bring you programs like this every single day. It's only made possible because listeners like you show your support. So give us a call right now and thank you. Remember, for $120 or a Become a Sustainer at $10 a month, we will send you the terrific stainless steel water bottle with our logo on it. It says thank you. You can bring it to the gym. You can walk around the beach or maybe take a little stroll through Springfield with your water bottle in hand. Make the call now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Think of all the great things that have come to you, even in the past year here at WJCT. We've launched the WJCT app, which is a great thing to have on your phone. You can listen to stories. You can listen to the radio. You just download the thing on your app. It says WJCT. You can't miss it. I have it on my phone. I hope you have it on yours. If you don't, download that app because it's really a great thing to have. We also have wonderful programs. Remember, we had things like Relax Radio, of course, is now on. It's on overnights. You can listen to it every single evening. You want to kick back and relax. If you have a digital radio, you can listen to it as well. We have the radio reading service, of course. Michelle, our morning edition host, runs the radio reading service. If you don't know what that is, it's a terrific program we've had here, had it for a long, long time, in which our volunteers come in, read the Florida Times Union for the visually impaired in Jacksonville. And you know, she could tell you about that. Lots of people, a lot more people than you think, pardon me, a lot more people than you may think, rely on that to get the information they need. And we're able to bring that to you because of the support the WJCT is in the community. Now, what we ask you to do is do your part for the programs you also enjoy. We have Diane Rehn coming up. Their roundtable is always a fascinating conversation. We have Fresh Air. We have All Things Considered. We have everything else you enjoy that brings to you every single day. Think of the great programs on the weekend you enjoy, like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and programs like that. Everything else, we just really enjoy bringing those programs to you. But we only can do that with your help. We are over the $28,000 mark, but we need to raise $72,000, so we're a ways behind. We'd really like to get your help. We have had some terrific Fridays during pledge drives in the time I have been here. Been here, like, you know, but the 15 years, what stands a little bit that I was gone from WJCT, but now I'm back, and we're back having great pledge drives. It's always wonderful to talk to people. I've really been touched by some of the things I've heard from people in the past month that I've been back, of how happy it is that I've returned here and can hear my voice on the air now and then, and that I'm helping produce First Coast Connect. And I do that because I want to come back because of my love for this station and this city and the people who listen to the station who are so important to me. Please make that phone call now. Thank you very much for your support. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. And thank you very much for your support for this, your public radio station.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.